You're listening to the New Utah Podcast with your hosts, Bree.
People can say my name and I still don't pay attention.
Chris.
This is what happens when your number one health concern in the state is porn.
Jeremy.
Flicks it and then walks up and just kicks the living crap out of whoever.
Really?
Yeah.
That's not even how it goes.
Dancey
dance.
Doesn't
matter.
Like that?
Feeling the groove.
She's so mad at me right now.
She's giving me the death glare.
Why? Episode 408 of the New Utah Podcast.
We're getting so close to our 8-year mark.
Yeah, we really are.
Like a month and a half.
How many episodes is 8 years?
8 times 52, 416.
So 8 more episodes?
416. That would be, yeah, right? 8 times 52 is 416. Pretty easy math,
I guess. Close.
Wow. Not a lot of shows have been doing it that long.
No, we've outlasted a lot of them. We're just stubborn.
Yeah. And we waited till 7.5 years to start our Patreon, patreon.com/TNUP. If you'd
like to
join.
Speaking of that, we grabbed some questions from it, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be asking our guests some questions from our Patreon members that talk to us in our Discord. So join up. We're trying to build a community, probably 6.5 years later than we should have started. But,
yeah,
we're
but
busy.
I'm not saying Patreon didn't exist, but 8 years ago you didn't really hear about it. Like
yeah, it wasn't
now.
Quite the same. And we still maintain, like we've always done the show relatively sponsor-free. We've had a couple of periods with sponsors that for short periods of time. But we're not beholden to anyone but ourselves. So, if you don't like what we say, you don't have to fucking listen, basically.
Yep.
And that was one thing very early on that we all said, this is more for our enjoyment than anything else.
And we may only have 3 listeners, but we love our 3 listeners and we do it anyway.
And if episode 417, we go, boy, this just really isn't our thing anymore. We're not really enjoying it. It's not fun. It's not, then we just won't do it. And we'll probably tell you goodbye and be done with life. Well, not life, the show. Probably we'll keep on with life is my guess. But
I don't see that happening because we're still having a good time.
No, we're still having a good time. And besides, we're booked through like April and into May now. So
We've got so many fun things coming up this year that we want to.
Yeah, it's a busy fucking year for sure. Did we talk about Little Chops? We did talk about Chops.
We did because Little Chops had just... The day of the last podcast,
yeah,
so we did. But you spent some time in Orlando with the freaks and geeks.
No, just with IT professionals in the healthcare industry.
Isn't that freaks and geeks?
No,
geeks.
Not even really. Like no. It's. I mean, like it's funny because you think of IT professional and you think like really fucking nerdy people,
like the It Crowd, the IT Crowd, that TV show.
I never saw that.
It's
but,
hilarious. You'd probably relate.
It's not, it's a lot more higher up, like directors,
gotcha.
C-suite level, IT professionals, people that are running like, you know, directors of information systems for like, you know, 40, hospital systems.
Yeah.
Or, you
so
know.
So Chris was sending pics of his, big.
That's
convention
huge.
Hall he was in, and I was sending pics of the Mayan ruins that I was at.
Yeah.
I was just sitting in my office.
Okay, so I really enjoyed the trip. It's a very educational conference. It's a weird show where vendors are typically also exhibitors because it's also the technology companies in the healthcare space. You know, it's a lot of, like, it's a mingling of government regulators, technology professionals, policymakers, you know, the technology professionals that are running hospitals that are integrating with medical staff. There's a bunch of physicians and stuff like that involved. So it's this big mashing of people. It's a huge networking event. They get some really good keynote speakers. There's a lot of educational sessions. I go for continuing education credits for one of my certifications. And I really enjoy it. But I gotta say, they tried something this year with one of their keynotes, with their opening keynote that was...
Oh my god.
The dumbest fucking thing I've seen at a professional trade show in, I don't know, probably my whole damn professional career. So, started out a little odd. Like, they try weird shit sometimes, Tim's does. They really... So it started off a little odd. They had like 6 different people mixed amongst the crowd, and they would you know, the lights go down. And so we're talking a huge grand ballroom, like as big, if not probably bigger than the grand ballroom for like FanX.
That's big.
Huge, like a huge stage, giant screens on both sides. They have a huge teleprompter like on the back screen. They have another screen.
Apple's yearly big monster thing.
Yeah, maybe. And then they have another screen like halfway back that is also a projector screen because you can't see the speakers that far back. I mean, this conference averages, I think, somewhere around 40,000 attendees.
Wow.
It's big. And they, you know, all of them attend the keynote. There's nothing else going on but the keynote, right? Or you just come into the conference late type thing. So they start, everything's dark. They go to spotlight each of these six people who are standing in the aisleways with a microphone saying some canned 30 to 60 second bit about healthcare technology.
Before you get to the good part, will you unplug the plug-in? Because the spill is already really strong. I can't think.
I don't like this. I don't really like this scent either. It's like weird.
Is this
the weird coffee, not coffee scent?
Maybe.
I'll put it over here. Maybe it won't leak.
Thanks.
I don't know. It's like all over my spot over here.
I know. And I can smell it and I'm distracted. I apologize, listeners.
Sony, back to the story. So they get done with this, and you can tell it's very much rehearsed and memorized. And when they fucked up, like you could tell they were like, "Oh shit, I fucked up. Oh my God, I just got back on track." Like,
so it's like some 90s.
But then,
this is the best part.
Then the stage lights up, and there's a bunch of fucking people in costume, which you have to understand. This is a professional show. Everyone's in. I mean, there's a ton of people in suit jackets. I don't wear a fucking suit jacket. I think that's crazy, but it's everything from jeans and a suit jacket and nice shoes to like what I wear, which is dress pants and a button up shirt.
Sure.
Not a lot of people with ties.
Business casual.
Yeah. Not a lot of polos though. You know, it's mostly button up shirts.
I wouldn't even say it's business casual. It's business.
Yeah. It's business. It's not really full professional with ties and everything. Like some folks wear ties. A lot of the speakers wear ties, but not most of the attendees. So anyway, costumes, and then they start fucking singing a version of a Taylor Swift song, but with healthcare information management systems lyrics.
And they're kind of dancing.
Not kind of. They straight up paid some professional group to come in and sing and dance to open this keynote. It was fucking awful. It was so ridiculous. So leading into this, I was sitting next to this guy that's doing a lot of research on healthcare costs. And we were having a pretty long conversation about some stuff. When it gets done, he turns to me and he goes, "I didn't know we were on Broadway." And you could tell the whole crowd, everyone kind of clapped, but everyone was like, "What the fuck?"
Everyone was like, "Woo!"
What did we just witness? And they were like, "Yeah, let's hear it for the dancers and blah, blah, blah." And everyone's like, "Can we just get to what we fucking paid a fair amount of money to fucking see and actually hear from?" In this instance, it was the head of Google's AI small business division that was giving this keynote. Can we just fucking skip all that pageantry and hear this guy talk for 30 minutes? Funny. So yeah. And then at the end, they're like, "Okay, we're going to bring the dancers back out." And everyone gets up and fucking leaves. No one stays to watch these dancers do their second thing. Everyone just fucking leaves the room.
Well, the Budweiser PR lady got fired. It sounds like she got a new job.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, anyway, it was a good conference out in Orlando. I'm really glad I flew back Thursday night, as did, half the conference, I think, based on the number of people in the airport. The amount of time I had to wait to get into the Sky Lounge, was pretty impressive. I've never had to wait that long. So it just tells you how many people were leaving.
Wow.
Okay. And then, so also last week, was it Saturday? Sunday? It was the weekend.
Call?
Yeah, this weekend, right? This last weekend? Or was it the weekend before?
No, it was the weekend before you left.
So the Sunday before I leave. I left on Monday. The Sunday before I leave, Sean calls. "Do you guys have a minute to talk?" Yeah. You know, because Sunday evening is like Brie and I's, we spend time together. We watch shows. That's what we do on Sunday evening.
Yeah, that's... that's kind of our Sunday too.
The house is clean. I make dinner. We just kind of chill and relax and, you know, get ready for the week. And we're like, yeah. She's like, so I haven't really been honest with you guys.
So at that point, what are you thinking?
Like, I don't even know initially, but then she's like, would it be okay if I move back home? We're like, well, of course, what's going on? And she's like, she then proceeds to tell us. So the whole thing with her moving down to Price with her friend and her friend's parents is her friend's parents had an unfinished basement that they had finished and turned it into an apartment for the girls. That was like the whole thing.
They get to have a full kitchen, but they'd have their own bathroom, their own space.
Their own bedroom, you know, pretty
each
separated
space.
They would
space. Have their own bedrooms. And
Sean goes, well, none of that's done. Which is a news to us because we didn't know because she hadn't said anything. And
well, and we met her parents and they let us
said,
believe that.
Yeah, they said, yeah, there's just a couple things left to do down there, but they've got their rooms and their own space. And we're like, hmm. And they're like, we just haven't put doors up yet. And I'm thinking like, oh, okay, so they've actually done most of the work and they just have a few things left to do. No, they've done nothing. And Sean has been sharing a bedroom with her friend.
She's been sleeping on their twin bed, like somebody else, like not her own bed that she has because that's what fits in her friend's room.
With her friend's bigger bed in the same room and their animals together. And so anyway, she's like, yeah, I need to move home. And we're like, okay, so now Saturday we're moving her back.
And we're like, when are you thinking? And she's like, well, before the end of the month.
So now, like, that's going to be a whole thing. Like the
well, the thing is, I guess probably the listeners don't know this, but I've been using her room as my office since the beginning of using it because her room had an art desk in it at the time. So it was the only other room in the house besides Chris's office that had a desk. And I started out with that because when I came home originally, it was a test run and then I never went back. So I've since like replaced it. I've since switched out some of the furniture to make like more room and make it more officey and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know, 3 months ago or something, Chris had an idea about closets. I ran past Jeremy. Jeremy's like, yeah, that would be an easy change, an easy thing to fix, you know, change back if you want to sell the house to move my office into the other room. So I had that plan. I just hadn't enacted the plan, but now we're in rush because she's going to sleep in the other room and we're going to try and fix the closet situation and then move her out of that room
and change the room that the office is in.
You still have all the plants.
We still have all the plants. Yes. Cassie's going to move the plants, I believe. Really, the only one she has to move is her Monstera is as big as the room. And when I say that, I don't mean like the full, but like it's almost as wide as the actual bedroom. Like its leaves rest on the bed and on the nightstand.
You gotta maybe turn your mic a little. It's weird. I don't know.
I moved it for a second. But anyway, and so she's gonna move some of them maybe. Chris is like, I don't mind having them here, but they may have to go out into Gen Pop, which is the reason she hasn't wanted them out of there is because cats like to chew on plants.
Oh, yeah.
She doesn't want her plants eaten, but that may be the case. But I'm like, you have to have those plants out so that we can move your sister in because that's where she's living. But we may actually have to use the U-Haul to haul the Monstera because it's so big.
It's stupid and unruly. And
I don't think it'll even fit in the back of my SUV.
I know she said I'm okay with the plants. I'd be okay with the plants if they were throughout the house. I hate those plants.
I mean, you told Cass you would be okay.
I hate houseplants in general because I think they're annoying to keep up and cats eat them and half of them are poisonous to animals.
I think she said only one of her plants.
Have you had them like a year?
No, the whole time since she moved, so a year and a half.
Yeah, and they just sit in that room with nothing in there except those plants that Cassie comes and waters.
But the light and I guess the temperature is really good for them because the Monstera has grown. Now, some of them have died because she doesn't come often enough to water them. But some of them are just thriving and they're huge. She's got a huge rubber plant. She's got a huge snake plant. She's got a huge Monstera.
Your Jumanji room.
Kind of.
Well, it won't be anymore. So anyway, that'll be fun.
So Sean will live in there temporarily until we get the closet done. And then she wants to paint her room before we move in. And so We're going to do that.
It's going to be disarray in this house for a while.
My goal is to have it done before I leave on my work cruise in the middle of May.
Or May.
Which is just under 60 days away.
I think it's doable. That's doable. I don't think that's that stressful to get that done. But, I mean, it definitely means, like, you know, I'm working two jobs and I'm going to school full time. And so, and trying to get the backyard revitalized, which is its own project. I'm hoping that, like, Sunday I can get some seed and peat moss down.
Well, I don't know if you noticed, but he started digging out the parking strip.
Just a little corner, because dirt weighs a lot, and I don't dare fill that garbage can up with too much dirt.
Well, that's exactly how I did mine. It took like 3 months, but just a little time.
So I think, what I'm going to do is wheelbarrow a good chunk of it to the backyard, and fill in where the dog runs.
Maybe only half of it, because the hole from the driveway.
Yeah, just the top layer.
Mid-yard is all, it's seeded with those sticker plants.
Yeah, I'll just get rid of the top layer into the garbage can and put the rest in the wheelbarrow. I'll be able to move a lot more dirt once I have the... Because our other wheelbarrow's all fucked up.
I've got one on the way.
Nice.
And then you've gone.
Yep. So we went on our cruise. So it's kind of a two-part... Hannah graduated during COVID, which was unfortunate. We had planned on doing a cruise and had the kids' passports and all that kind of stuff, but COVID, I don't really need to say more. So this was finally the chance. And then with my unplanned operation, we weren't sure if that was going to happen, but luckily I was given the green light. So yes, we were finally able to do our Caribbean cruise that we've been trying to do for, three or four years now. So I did have to cancel my off-roading and my ziplining.
That's all right.
But we still had a good time. We did get to see the ruins in Honduras. I was really excited. They had a hand-rolled cigar shop.
Yeah.
Where they were rolling them. So that was really cool. And I got to watch them and all that. And then of course, I got one. And it was very disappointing.
It's never as great as you think.
It's not the magic that you're thinking, hand-rolled cigar. You know what I mean? I mean, it was okay, but it wasn't.
I mean, really good hand-rolled cigars are great, but...
It wasn't the magic I was hoping that it would be. No. However, being there, the smell of that shop was absolutely amazing.
Oh, yeah, I bet. Like all that fresh tobacco.
Yeah. And then watching them roll it, and the whole ceiling in this shop was just lined with tobacco leaves that were drying out. So very cool experience. Super awesome. Got my cigar. And there happened to be another guy on the ship.
Well, also you went to Honduras to get a hand-rolled cigar.
Right. Well, I didn't know they had them, so it wasn't.
Yeah, the Dominican or Cuba are the two places you would really want to go for that.
So there was another guy that was on the ship with me, and we were kind of talking. He got one too, and we were both like, "Yeah, this isn't quite where I thought it was going to be." But it was cool. I mean, the experience, being able to see it and be part of it, that was really awesome. So no, we had a really good time. And so yeah, I was sending you guys a few pictures here and there when I had reception. So. On the ship, nothing. And we'd land to port and I'd have some. My phone would blow up. I'd try to send you guys some stuff. So anyway, but no, I'm really glad that, one, I was able to go at all, because we were really worried I wasn't going to be able to go. But we went. The weather was great. The only time we hit the storm, and I don't know if you guys knew this, but Texas is having some really crazy storms right now. So the last night at sea coming into Galveston was pretty rocky and some pretty impressive lightning and thunderstorms.
That's awesome. I love sailing in that weather. I know it's not everyone's favorite, but
it's funny because the next day, Heather's like, I was really worried that they were going to sound the alarm and we were going to have to go stand by the lightboats. And I'm like,
that's pretty rare occurrence.
She was just paranoid, just the storm.
That it was so crazy.
But it really wasn't even rocking. I mean, Jonathan slept through the whole thing. He didn't even see the lightning or anything. So it wasn't crazy, but she was a little panicky, but I thought it was amazing. That lightning that would just light up the whole ocean and the thunder.
It's freaking cool.
And I mean, it was choppy, but not bad. But anyway, other than that, though, the weather was perfect. We had great weather. We had a good time. The beaches were nice.
That's awesome.
It's the off season, so it really wasn't that crowded.
I mean, technically it was spring break because I was in Florida. And they had fucking massive amounts of people there.
So
for
I guess
spring
I should
break.
Say,
yeah.
Galveston was packed.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Galveston is Texas's party place. But all of our other spots were not.
Why can I hear that in your microphone? Did you forget to turn your microphone off?
Blowing his nose. Yeah, you do what you gotta do. And then Costa Maya, we did see the ruins, and we went, you know, we were talking before, the one that we had, they canceled. Mm-hmm. And so they rebooked us on the one where we went inland. We drove like 2.5 hours inland.
In Costa Maya?
Uh-huh.
Not Cozumel or...
No,
or,
so no, okay. So there are ones in Cozumel, but we did the Costa Maya.
Okay, okay.
So we drove about 2.5 hours inland.
Because I was curious, because that's we didn't go to Costa Maya at all.
And those were amazing, and you could actually get on most of them. And there was only... Our bus had maybe 25 people from our ship.
Yeah, that stuff's so cool to go.
Everybody did the, like, 20-minute away one, like 6 buses full.
Yeah.
And then our bus did the one that was the... but it was awesome. It was funny because we're driving through the actual towns. And Hannah's like, this place is the top. But I'm like, this place is real Mexico.
Yep. That's what most of Mexico looks like outside of the big cities. I mean, because their cities are cities like Ensenada, Mexico City, like they're modern cities, but like there's a huge chunk of rural Mexico that is, it's fucking,
that's the Mexico I saw like when I was in college and we went, that's the Mexico.
Well, it's like, you know, when we went to Belize, we drove from the coast all the way to the Guatemalan border to go to the Mayan ruins there. And, you know, we were able to go up and climb those big, tall temples at Zunanchunich. And they might have, there's a lot of talk that the Belizean government is going to
shut that down.
Just stop that now and not let people climb on them anymore just because of the wear and tear.
But I mean, we were warned, like, be careful because you're right on the border. And
there's military people everywhere.
Yeah. People with guns are waiting to shoot you if you cross.
So this one, we were able to get up on them. A couple things I noticed. They're big, but they weren't as big as I thought they were going to be. I mean, don't get me wrong. They are sizable.
Well, and the pictures that you sent, yours didn't seem like Zunanchunich is huge. Like Zunanchunich, you can see miles and miles and miles away from the top because it's really high. It's high up on top of a high mountain or a high hill.
Right.
But the ones you sent didn't seem nearly as tall.
Yeah, so it in and of itself was on a plateau, but they were not as tall as I had in my mind. But maybe it was just the ones that we were at. However, the history and everything else and our tour guide and just talking about it and how the Aztecs were basically the bastards that nobody liked and they were the ones that did the sacrifices and the killing. But he's like, they were a very minute group, and when the Spaniards showed up, it was actually the Mayans who got the Spaniards to work together to kill the Aztecs because nobody liked the Aztecs.
Well, they were warring tribes. They were warring nations. I mean, the Mayans were all on the eastern side of Mexico and in the Caribbean, and the Aztecs were really on the western
side. And the Mayans were the peaceful, the farmers, the ones that actually built the cities.
I mean, Mayans did sacrifices and stuff, too. Like,
I'm sure they had theirs.
Did you see did they have any of those ball courts?
They did.
Yeah. So, and the ball courts, the winners of those games were the ones that got sacrificed.
And,
so.
And him explaining the whole thing. So they're east to west and the sun and all. Mm-hmm. So it was really cool. And I've learned about that stuff and obviously in architecture and college and we've talked about all this. But to actually be able to go and stand in it once in a lifetime, very cool. So I'm really glad we got to go.
I'm glad. I'm glad you guys got to experience that. And, you know, we'll be back in those neighborhoods in March. When we go on our Panama cruise. So I sent Bria a video yesterday of a ship transiting the locks.
It was so cool.
Yeah. So on the ship, they actually had videos of the different cruises. So I watched the actual Panama cruise of the princess on the princess ship.
Yeah, of one of the princess ships. Yeah.
Super cool.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. So, well, cool. Easter's coming up a couple weeks from now, I think.
Oh, hold on.
Can't hear anything.
Do you not realize I have had diarrhea since Easter's?
Wow. So,
thanks. So it's 2 weekends from now, the 31st. So it's actually in March. Which
so you
is
have
weird.
To watch Nepal, or you have to watch Nacho Libre on Easter because it's an
no,
Easter.
Thank you.
It's an Easter movie.
I might.
I'd rather not.
I didn't get to watch The Leprechaun on St. Patrick's Day because they don't really go together, but they do, and I should have, but I was busy.
We watch Nacho Libre on Easter.
Nice.
Don't you know? Don't you realize I have had the
I'll have to watch
Easter's.
That by myself if I watch it. So I'm sure Sean's going to be here and she'd be like, are you going to make make Easter dinner? I might make a ham because that's what we did last year. And then got in trouble for not inviting anyone to. Literally, we made a ham and got some rolls. Like, we didn't actually have anything other than ham and rolls. But it is what it is. Folk Hogan's going. It's not Folk Hogan. Is it just Nick and Aria?
Nick and Aria are doing a European tour. They actually left today. Yeah. They're going to Germany, Switzerland. There's a couple other places. But they're going to be doing posts from these different places and little snippets. So if you follow them on any of the socials,
you'll get to see all that
stuff.
You'll
get to see some of that stuff. That'll be really cool. So super exciting. And then Cakes by Edith, they're doing another one of their Mommy and Me baking for Easter. So they have two dates, the 16th, I had it listed, 26th and 28th.
Yeah, I was going to say the 16th doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So next week, basically, go look at their stuff on there.
And they sell out pretty fast because their shop's not real big.
It might even be sold out by the time you hear this. So,
but check it out. They always do really well. And it's the Mommy and Me baking for Easter.
Okay, joining us this week after a bit of a dry spell from the guest. These guys were very responsive, unlike a few of the last guests, and we're very happy to have Mark Warren and Mike Chapman, the co-owners of Skydive Utah, with us this week. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us.
We are happy to have you. Through a really weird set of circumstances, our last 2 weeks, the last two guests canceled on us. Like at the last minute, which it happens, but two in a row
usually
is like,
doesn't happen. Two in a row, yeah.
That doesn't usually happen. So it's nice to have a guest again.
Yeah, we're happy to be here.
Yeah,
you might need to tilt your mic up, Jeremy. It keeps you're slouching down into it. And
go up a little.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Well, I'm just saying, like,
we're having all sorts
of you
technical
can just
difficulties.
Like actually tilt it, just, and you'd probably be okay. Just that part. Yeah, just like that.
Is that good?
Yeah, that's much better.
I wonder if it kind of slowly earned with.
Yeah, especially because you try to put your headphones on it every week, and I bet those pull it down a little.
That could do it too. Okay.
And the cat. The cat likes to sit in that chair.
Yeah, he likes the chair because you have an extra padding on yours.
So you're not allergic to cats, are you?
No.
Because there's a good chance. Sometimes the cat, when we're doing the show, just jumps right up on the table and walks around and says hi to everyone. So okay. I don't know where he's at right now. He's not over here, so we'll see.
He'll show up. He just does.
Anyway, okay. So you guys are the owners of Skydive Utah. We'll start with our first question for you guys, which is, what's your birthday?
You don't have to do years.
September 2nd, 1987. I'm 36.
He already knows what's coming because he's listening.
Oh, you've been
to some
listening.
Shows.
Okay. Yeah. So, well, let's get to it. You're a Christmas baby.
No, September 2nd. Yeah.
No.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So around Christmas time, your parents went to a party.
Yep. Yep,
got festive.
Had a little too much.
I mean, that became a kind of a late, like, that's early December, though, really. You said early September, right? September 2nd?
So that's Christmas party season.
That's like Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it could be Thanksgiving. They were giving thanks.
Yeah.
sweet turkey basting going on.
I'm here for a reason.
Okay, Mark, how about you?
I am July 18th, 1989.
Hey, so mid-October. So
that's fall.
You're in October, baby. You're a Halloween.
You're the
mistake.
Day before Chris, only way later because he's way
I'm
older.
July 19th. So
okay.
I wouldn't say way older. That would make you way older than me.
Yeah, but nobody's as old as Jeremy.
Did you say 89?
89, yes.
89, okay. So yeah,
but
maybe
nobody's as old as Jeremy.
That's true. I was starting high school.
I was moving to Wyoming from Texas in 89. That was a very pivotal year in the upbringing of Chris. I left all my family and my support system to go to Wyoming, a town of 150,000 people in Texas, to a town of 300 in Wyoming.
But you moved to a sweet, sweet double wide.
No. That was the basement of my uncle, which was my wife's new husband's house.
Your wife's new husband?
My mom's.
Was the double wide. Did the double wide come later?
That was later. And it was never a double wide. We weren't rich, you son of a bitch. So where are you guys from? Where were you born?
I'm a military background. So I was born in Italy, moved all over the country.
Nice.
I don't remember it. Lived there for like 6 months. So.
Yeah. What branch? Army?
Air Force. My dad was Air Force, and then I was Air Force.
Oh,
sweet. Nice.
So where all did you go? Italy? Where else?
Oh,
did
Italy,
you Germany, most?
Vegas, California twice, Virginia, here in Utah, Maryland, Texas, Oklahoma, back to Utah.
Nice. So are you still in the military? Or?
Nope. Out of the military as of 2011.
Gotcha.
Oh, so not long ago.
How long did you serve for?
I was in for 6 years.
6 years. Okay. What was your specialty?
I was a maintenance analyst.
Okay. Yeah. So you didn't hold a gun ever?
No, I didn't do anything cool, really. It was a desk job.
I don't want to downplay any branch of the service, but Air Force is the only branch where you don't always have to learn how to fire a weapon.
Yeah, yeah.
Every other branch
I did.
Require...
I did get to do that, but that's good.
It is called the Chair Force for a reason.
Yeah, yeah. I approved that.
So I grew up Army. My dad was Army. My brother-in-law, Marines. Cool. So, yeah.
I love the Air Force. I was in Civil Air Patrol as a kid, so I'm a big fan of the Air Force. Cool.
Well, there's actually a lot of people, because of the Hill Air Force Base, a lot of people that we've had on the show, that's why they're here. That's why they're in Utah.
Yeah, that was my last station. Yep.
The owners of Talisman Brewing in Ogden, they're both retired Air Force.
Yeah. Okay.
They got done with the Air Force, and they're like, this is all we know. What are we going to do? And he's like, I like beer. And so they're like, well, let's start a brewery. So anyway.
That's perfect.
Okay, Mark, where are you from?
Yeah, not military background, but I moved a little bit. Born in Chicago, grew up in Florida, grew up more in Seattle, and then moved to Utah for college.
Some really, really different places.
Different countries,
but like really different places than the states.
Yeah. Because
you got a Florida man.
Well, yeah. Like culturally, like Chicago is like big city. It's like big. Yeah, it's like New York with more mobs.
And then
there's like Southside Chicago, which we won't talk about that. That's like a different kind
and
of
then
mob.
Florida.
Yeah, I was a baby in Chicago. It was mostly Florida. Grew up in Florida. Grew up in Seattle.
So did you go to like high? Did you make it to high school in Florida, or was that?
No, I was basically 10 years Florida, 10 years Seattle, and then now the rest here.
What part of Florida?
Central Florida.
Because the parts of Florida are very different. A lot of people don't understand this. Like Central Florida is like pretty normal suburban America. Right?
Yeah, it was
like,
definitely.
Then you get down to like the Everglades area.
Well, you can find it pretty easy.
But you know, Miami is like South Florida is like, you know, very hip, like club scene, like very LA-esque in a sense, but in Florida. And then you have the panhandle of Florida, which is like backwoods, brothers and sisters getting married sort of part of Florida. So Florida's got a lot. Well, the Everglades are like Central Florida, but there's not as
the people that live. Like,
there's not as many hillbillies in the Everglades as you think. It's the panhandle where the hillbillies are. Yeah,
yeah, the panhandle over by Alabama,
like
and
Pensacola.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that those areas, man, they're not quite Alabama, but they basically are Alabama.
Florida, not quite Alabama.
You got a pretty mouth, boy.
Y'all remember the old movie with Robin Williams, The Birdcage?
Oh, yeah.
That's all I can think about with Southern Florida. That movie
are they in Miami in that one? I can't.
Yeah.
That movie was hilarious.
So then you come here for the U and just kind of stuck?
Yeah, went to the U, studied.
There you go.
Studied materials engineering, and then did some kind of testers by having some jobs during college of testing out what it would be like to be an engineer, and then didn't really like it. And the day after I graduated, I took a job packing parachutes at Skydive Utah instead of getting an engineering job.
You got a leg up on me. You got your degree. I started a mechanical engineering at the U, and I was like, this is fucking stupid. Like, I don't want to draw fucking nuts and bolts and shit all the time. Like, this is the dumbest thing ever. I'm out. I just left. I didn't
started
get a degree.
Mechanical at first. I did the mechanical for the first half, and same kind of just
the mechanical.
Really
like
you're
like in a 16th of an inch, 8th of an inch. Like,
I'm like, I fucking it's. I'm like, I hate art. Why the fuck would I draw all these things? And I remember like this was the telltale for me of like I didn't really recognize how privileged I was based on the school system I was in. You know, we had a lot of money in education where I'm from. Even though I was super poor, I had access to a lot of technology. I go to the U and the engineering lab at the time in the late 90s, the like best lab on campus, that they were running these CAD programs for, you know, mechanical engineering and whatnot. And these computers suck. These are worse than the library computers in high school.
The architectural department had decent computers for the time.
The same thing as the CAD stuff, right?
Yeah, because it was all CAD, but that was 95, 96. However, back when I was in college, we did half on the computer and half hand.
Oh, yeah, we did it all
hand. That sounds right.
Because it was still late 90s. It was still like prevalent. In fact, the first job I had, I was doing half.
I remember the basic, the first mechanical engineering class was all hand drawn crap in a book, in a workbook.
I remember I had, when I was doing my apprenticeship, I had this guy that did all of the landscaping plants and all that kind of stuff, and he drew on vellum or mylar, yeah, which is like a plasticky paper. That stuff is there's no forgiveness with that stuff, and he could just freehand on there, and he's like, that CAD crap's never gonna take off. They're never gonna replace the hand drawing. And I'm like, okay.
And you're like, whatever, I do 50 plans on the time it took you to do that bedroom.
That's funny. When I was going in, 08 to 12 or somewhere around there, the big reason I switched off mechanical was that it was too much computer. It was more computer coding than I wanted to do, and I really didn't like and was not good at the computer coding, and I kind of switched over to the more chemistry stuff that was materials.
Yeah. Isn't it kind of crazy how that all like just kind of shifts around?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's good stuff.
In my opinion, I'm very biased. Architecture is the only medium left where there's any creativity. Engineering, yeah. All you're doing is engineering what somebody else has already designed.
So I understand how you get into skydiving because you started packing chutes for Skydive Utah. And I would kind of understand.
Well, he doesn't really know. Like, how did that come about?
Well,
like,
I'm going to get to my question for Mike first, because this is more, for me, this is more intriguing. You were a mechanic in the Air Force. Why the fuck did you decide to jump out of perfectly good airplanes?
Oh, I think it's fun. Well, like, I've never done it.
But I was an analyst, so.
Okay, so you didn't actually fix them.
No, I wasn't turning wrenches, but I just went for fun when I was in Colorado with a friend and loved it. And so I was jumping.
Did you do parachute school in military?
I did not. No.
But that was 101st Airborne.
Yeah.
That's, again, Air Force. The Air Force.
No, it is very different, but.
Unless you're a snake eater, you don't jump out of a perfectly good airplane in the Air Force.
Yeah.
You bomb people.
They send the Rangers. Yeah. My dad was a Ranger, 101st Airborne. Okay. They're the ones that get pushed out of the plane.
Yeah, the Air Force has the PJs. They're just mainly search and rescue, though.
Yeah, snake eaters.
Yeah, but my first job in skydiving was packing parachutes as well in Colorado. And I just did that as a weekend gig for fun, mainly to get discounts on skydives.
It was like for fun, huh?
Yeah.
Because packing parachutes doesn't seem like a fun job. That seems to me like a stressful job because you're kind of,
It's honestly it's the entry level job for there. It's when anything else, you get the entry level job.
Like, everybody's life depends on whether it's packed right. But it's the entry level job.
It's the main. The parachute packers are only packing your first chute, your primary chute, and the secondary is the important one, your reserve, and that's got to be packed by a certified FAA rigger. So as just a parachute packer on the ground, you're just going for speed, and 99% of the time it works every time. So
it's that one.
You're just like shoving it in. Like, you're like, I hope I got those folds right.
Yeah. I mean, you're tossing that canopy into 120 miles an hour wind, so your little perfect folds aren't doing much anyway. So.
The hard work is done by the designers. They make the parachutes so good these days that they're just gonna work. I mean, they have so much margin for error for how you pack it or this or that, that it's hard to mess it up.
I don't know. So not like the 737 Maxes.
Not like that, right.
We knew that was going to come up.
You don't jump out of those. I mean, you probably could
but have a Boeing skydiving plane.
Yeah. I've stayed behind enemy lines. I know how those shits don't work.
So you guys just did jumps and fell in love with skydiving like instantly?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, he said he just went out for fun one time, and I did the same thing. I just went out to Skydive Utah. That's where I've pretty much done 99% of my skydives. I went out by myself, liked it, and then just started doing it right after that, simple enough. And then I did it more and more, and then it kind of just became something I just was drawn to more and more as I progressed in it.
Where's Skydive Utah based out of?
Tooele.
Tule.
Right in the center of the Tule Valley at the Erta Airport.
So which airport there?
Yep, Erta Airport, the Tule Valley Airport. It's right there at
Small. That's like Airport 2, isn't it? Kind of just a smaller.
Even smaller, less. But we're the only business there. There's nothing else going on except.
Bigger runway, but smaller as far as development.
Like crop dusters and stuff?
Yep, we have BLM planes. Not so much crop dusting, but fire.
Same
plane, but they use it for firefighting.
Right.
Dropping stuff out on fields of things.
Right.
Yeah. Usually on fire, though.
They stay busy. They're flying all over, sometimes as far as Montana from here, because they're the closest base. So.
Wow. Really? Yeah. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. That's a bit of a That's weird that Montana doesn't have, because they get
it, well, they might have been called out to other fires. And
oh, okay, yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Montana's a big place. They got a lot of open air too. I think airport's pretty easy there. They can just land wherever they want.
It's like, especially those air tractors. They're
Mike, when did you do your first jump?
Oh man,
if you could, about time, about age wise, about kind of.
2009, I think, 2008.
And how many jumps have you done since then?
Between 4,000 and 5,000. Yes. Closer to, around there.
And how about you, Mark?
Right around the same time. I started in 2010, but I've got less. I'm sitting around 2,000, maybe 2,500 right now.
Sweet. So when you did your first one, like what were you thinking? Like,
oh, my first jump was a blur. That was the facility I went to, Mile High in Colorado. At the time, they didn't require to do a tandem jump, so I just figured out what to love it. And so my first jump was solo with an instructor, two instructors actually. But you know, it went well, obviously. And
did you die?
Here. Yeah, I'm still here. But it was a blur. Barely remember it.
Did you go because you wanted to? Was it a dare? Was it a bucket list?
It was just something me and my buddy signed up for together.
Okay, like, hey, this sounds cool.
Yeah.
It's like a skydive every other damn day for 16 years. That's fucking...
How about you, Mark? Same question. What your first...
Yeah, same thing. I did do a tandem, though, because that's what Skydive Utah, even back then, we'd still do it now, but they were doing it back then as well. And I went by myself because none of my friends wanted to go. So it was just me. Nobody else. And same kind of thing. I remember it a little bit. I do kind of remember it was obviously scary. And you're like, what if this? What if that? Yeah. And then as we started falling out of the plane and we were looking around, kind of turning, looking at the Great Salt Lake. And I was like, all right, you know what? Even if the parachute doesn't even work at this point.
This is really cool.
It's really cool. Like, it is worth it.
I'm happy if I die this way.
I remember specifically thinking that about halfway down, being like, you know what? This was still worth it, even if it doesn't work out. And obviously, it was perfect. The parachute was fine. Everything was, as it was supposed to.
So how long do you free fall about?
About a minute. A little less, like 50 seconds usually.
A free fall, and then you pull the chute.
On a classic, skydive belly first style. Yeah, you can change it because you can go faster and slower and with the squirrel suits and all that other kind of, way more crazy stuff you can do these days. But your typical is 50 seconds for like a first time.
About a minute and a half if the chute doesn't open. So.
Speaking of that, have you guys ever base jumped?
I have not.
I have
a little bit. Is there a desire to from you?
Deep down, maybe yes, but also no. I've been peer pressured into doing it for, I don't know, the whole time I've been skydiving now, and I've held off this long, and
now it's kind of a bad right? Like, I'm not doing it now.
A lot more inherently dangerous and
weird.
It takes a lot of commitment and time. Yeah. It's not something you can just do every once in a while to stay safe. So it's just not a sport I've gotten into, and I'm surprisingly really afraid of heights. So I think I'd be really freaking out on a base jump, especially on the edge of a cliff. So. Well,
and you have base jumped then, you said, Mark.
Yes, I did enough to, I did it like 5 times at the Twin Falls Bridge, which is where everybody goes to learn. It's, it's a few hours away.
It's probably one of the safest places to base jump because there's like nothing below you.
Yep. It's legal. It's safe. The bridge is the best because you can, your parachute could open backwards and you're not going to hit a cliff.
Have you ever done it like with the squirrel suits? Have you seen those videos?
Yes. Oh, I mean,
no, they've not seen any of those.
Most of our, obviously it's a different sport, but a lot of our staff and the licensed jumpers base jump as well. And they do all that stuff
that
you'd be
so
seeing
crazy
in those videos. I do wingsuiting, the squirrel suit thing. It's called wingsuiting. I do that skydiving out of an airplane when there's no cliffs around.
Right.
It's a little safer. I don't do it off of cliffs and never have. I don't know if I ever will. We'll see.
That's so crazy.
Well, you know, there's a place out in Bluffdale that does like augmented reality base jumping That's specific. I think it's called like Jump Utah or something. I don't know. I saw a presentation a couple years ago at a tech conference, but it's the same. It's the idea of like jumping through the valleys of like South Mountain in a freaking squirrel suit off the side of the mountain and just like
it's all VR and you're on the bungees and all that.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah. The guys that develop that jump at our drop zone.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So they jump a lot. Do a lot of training. A lot of the base jumpers doing the wingsuiting, they train out of an airplane.
So where there's less good. Danger
yeah.
of guns.
That's where you start. Yeah, you start there for sure.
You mean
yeah.
you don't just strap on a suit and jump off the mountain the first I mean, time, and you're like, let's I mean, you see could. If I
yeah,
live.
There's nothing stopping you if you want to, but generally, no.
Learning to control yourself takes yeah. some time, maybe.
Yeah.
That's like throwing a kid that's learning how to drive, like, onto the freeway.
There oh, you yeah. go. yeah. Definitely.
So what do you guys, what do each of you love about skydiving? Why is it that you have done it every other day for like 16 years?
Oh man, the freedom. I mean, it's like, it's the only sport that I can do that's, you know, 4D. You can move your body in every dimension. The speed, the relativity, the camaraderie with friends, and yeah, it's just a feeling that's unmatched by anything else that I've ever done. And when you jump out of that plane, kind of like Mark said on his first jump, I mean, there's nothing else to focus on. There's no worry in the world. There's no time doesn't even exist until the ground starts coming at you. But it's just fun. It's a different kind of fun than I've ever really experienced.
So you said the camaraderie is a big part of it, and you have to tell me what it's really like, but I've always pictured guys like you that like run a skydiving business and around skydivers, like you're the old ski patrol of the like 80s ski patrol movies, like the ski bum bros, like, oh, let's go dive out of a plane. Like, I think like Point Break type dudes,
you know, that it still kind of has that vibe.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So yeah. I'm right. Yeah. So that is like spot on.
Yeah. And it can be as simple as, you know, you and I go out on a skydive and high five each other in the air, and we get down to the ground and we're like, dude, we just high fived at 120 miles an hour, man. Like
6,000 feet in the air.
Ever skydive. I want to skydive so bad. And he's like,
oh, no, not doing that. I don't need that thrill in my life. I get plenty of other thrills. What about you, Mark? Why do you skydive?
I guarantee you nothing would be as thrilling as that. And I've not even done it.
It's, I mean, it starts off as it's just like thrilling and crazy. But, you know, kind of the thing a lot of people say, which I definitely agree with, is it's really fun to, you know, learn to get better at it. And that kind of is weird to say, but it's more than just kind of falling straight down. Eventually you'll learn to, you know, you can straighten your legs, push your arms back, and kind of become more like an arrow position, and you can go forward. And like, even without a squirrel suit on, if you just make your body into that kind of squirrel suit shape, you can go forward like those guys, you know, and it's not as much, but it still feels like you're going forward. You feel like you're kind of Superman across the sky, and it just and then obviously you can be better at it. You know, you could have like 10 guys in a tight cluster making turns together. That's awesome. Once you practice more. And then, a thing personally for me that I really like is instead of jumping out of the plane and falling, I'll jump out of the plane, pull my parachute right away. And eventually I've worked my way down to really fast and smaller parachutes, kind of like, you know, you start on a big sedan when you're driving, and then you can kind of work your way up to like an F1 car, and it's driving, but it's a whole different thing. So I'll actually skip the free fall part, go straight to my parachute, and then I get a, you know, 5, 10, 20 minute ride down where I can, you know, do barrel rolls and fly down under the wing and do all kinds of just.
So do you guys do any of that sort of stunt parachute stuff?
Yeah, it's swooping is what he's talking about as far as, you know, you're diving your parachute out of the ground. It's really fun. Both of us are really into that. It's kind of
really
what
fun.
Kept me into the sport, actually, was canopy flying. And it's you get that relativity across the ground, planning out your parachute and just going as fast as you can across the ground and for as far as you can.
That's cool.
And it's not something we've ever done in competition. Mm-hmm. It's just fun enough to do alone by yourself.
If you've ever been to an air show, there's blast. They always have at least one or two sets of jumpers that do that stuff in the air.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And the swooping thing is really fun. It's like, you know, if you're like an airplane that's basically spiraling towards the ground and you want to time it where you pull up just in time to go skimming across the ground as far as you can. And obviously that clearly can be more dangerous. So it is a dangerous part of the sport and you got to be careful and baby steps your way up. But when you get it right and you do go flying across the ground at 70 miles an hour or whatever it might be,
so cool.
It's really, really fun.
Yeah. Do you guys wear helmets? Is that like a requirement when you skydive?
It's not, but
because
it's smart.
I feel like it's a – I mean, like, I'm not an anti-helmet person. I think, like, if you ride motorcycles or on bike, you should be wearing a helmet. But also, like, I think it's different being, you know – 5 feet off the ground or however tall you are and having your head hit the ground versus, you know, falling from 5,000, 6,000 feet.
Yeah. So the helmet in skydiving is more for, aerial impacts so that you don't knock yourself out.
In case you run into someone else.
Yeah. Or when you leave the plane, you don't bump your head on the door or your buddy's head, you know, bonking heads with someone else as you're coming into,
plus it's a good place to mount a camera, right?
Yes.
That's the best part right there.
Yeah. You hear about those people that jump out of a plane, the chute doesn't open and they bounce and live.
I don't know about that. Maybe I think you there's hear about been a couple of cases of that
incredibly
in snow.
Rarely.
Incredibly rare, yeah.
And
like
I
in the '80s,
think it's like snow
a
involved.
Trampoline or something? Like what the hell?
Yeah. One of the end ground ones.
It's definitely happened, but it's pretty rare. Yeah. Super. Yeah.
The base jumpers have done that. The guys who jump off cliffs, especially with the wingsuits, that's happened. Yeah. You can crash a wingsuit and live. That's happened.
But you're also
times.
Like you've slowed yourself down quite a bit with a wingsuit. You like in theory, right? Yes. Like that's probably how they're surviving.
Yeah.
Also, they're not jumping from nearly as high usually.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, even a big cliff, it'll take what 1,000 feet. No, 500 feet to get to full speed, something like that. It's about 10 seconds to get to full speed. And at that point, doesn't matter how high you are, you're going as fast as you're going to go.
You hit terminal velocity.
For the most part, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's a good question. How high do you guys typically jump from? Like, are there different categories that you guys do? Or
so we typically go to 12,000 feet above the ground. So our field elevation out in Twila is about 4,400 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to about 16,500, 17,500, if the conditions are good. And legally, we can't go above 18,000 without, you know, special permission from FAA.
Because then you're in commercial.
Yeah, you're in Class A airspace up there. Yeah.
Would it change your jump at all, going higher like that? Or
The length of time.
I was going to say, they'd be able to be.
But if you were to jump from like, because most commercial airlines are cruising around 30,000.
Well, I don't think they're going to go that high.
But like if you jumped from 30,000, one, you'd probably have to have a special suit and you'd probably have to have oxygen.
Oxygen's the big one.
Yeah.
Yep. And so our pilots have to breathe oxygen at the altitude that we're at. But
you guys are just like, we're going to be lightheaded when we jump out of this thing.
You're not up there long enough. No. If you were up there for over a half hour,
because you pretty much just climb straight up,
jump right out.
So how long, the guy flying the plane, how long is he up? How long does his loop take?
Typically from the time you pull up, wait for the jumpers to load, and then you're back, at the loading area about a half hour.
Oh, yeah. So he's not up there that long.
Mike is one of the pilots. No. Yeah. I'm not a pilot, but Mike is one of the guys.
Yeah.
Do you guys have your own planes too then?
We do. Yeah.
How many planes do you guys have and what kind?
We have one right now. It's a PAC 750 XL and it's made in New Zealand. Originally designed for crop dusting. And the manufacturer converted it to, skydive specific.
So how many people can go up in your plane?
We can put 15 jumpers plus pilot.
Wow.
Up.
So it's not just a little crop duster.
Yeah,
it's pretty good size.
Works really well.
Yeah. I mean, little crop dusters, people think of crop dusters as small, but they hold a lot of weight.
Right. Well, you think of crop dusters, a one, maybe two seater.
Yeah, just because the whole thing is full of
it's all right,
whatever pesticide or whatever.
So. Yeah, their max gross is probably double ours, actually.
Yeah, that's insane. The weight calculation is a big part of flying, especially smaller aircraft, more than anything.
Yep.
So walk us through kind of a typical, we show up, we've never been before, we get there. Just kind of walk us through the process.
Yeah, your first time it's easy. You know, we do all the work for you to try to make it easy. So you'll show up on your day to jump, check in at the front desk. You might add on, you know, like a photo or video option. We have like a few different options for photo video packages where like your instructor might take some photos. Another skydiver might come with you and film the whole thing from an outside view. There's kind of a few different options. You'll figure that out, decide if you want it or not.
So you do that like that day. You don't have to like decide to do that before.
No, we're always ready for it. We'll just, you know, whatever you guys need, we have the staff for it. And most of our staff could be a video guy, they could be the instructor you're attached to.
They're usually bummed to have to go up short notice and jump for.
Yeah, they're usually they're not really bummed no matter.
There's
what
a reason
choose.
These guys have like 4,000 dives.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Some of the instructors have way more than us.
What?
It's
really
cool.
I have to go up twice today.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So they'll do 10-15 jumps in a day if it's a busy day.
Yeah, I was gonna say if it's only taking that long.
Oh yeah. They'll be on multiple
they're
100%
like ski bombs.
Yeah, so they're all hanging out in the hangar waiting for you. You get checked in, get all paid up, get wavered up, all that squared away. You watch a quick video that's only about 10 minutes long. There's a waiver part from the people that own the gear, and then there's our part that just gives you a couple things to do as the passenger, because you know, you're still involved, even though you're not really doing a...
Yeah, you could still be like a douche with your
you're
tandem diver and like...
falling through the air.
You
really,
pee on
really
your tandem
fast.
Diver, like wave your arms around. Yeah. And like...
So there's a couple things that they'll ask you to do, and hopefully you'll do, but if not, they can still handle it because that's what they do, right?
Right.
Have they ever had to like punch someone in the head to knock them out so they could take control?
Luckily, no.
Not at our job, so, but yes, at other.
Yes,
but,
maybe. So like that is an option that you have to talk about with your staff.
They just have like a taser because remember they have a helmet on? They can't hunt.
It's actually, it's part of the hookup for the tandem jump, like the suits are tied together, is actually electrodes like sticking in.
keep them in line.
Really, the main scenario that the instructors train for is your passenger immobilizing your hands, grasping your arms.
Yeah,
or...
if they freak out and grab on your arms with fear strength, you know, it can be pretty hard to
adrenaline's
pull
a bit.
Push. Yeah, which has happened
it
before.
Those moms
sure.
with the school bus.
Yeah. So you know, just have to figure out how to not.
That
let
is also
do
an
that.
Urban legend. Man, you are full of fucking urban legends tonight.
Yeah, the
like
instructors
I saw this
definitely
mom
need their
arms. Like three school buses to save 10 kids.
Oh yeah, so you're in, you came in, you just finished up your video.
Signed our paperwork, watched
signed your
video.
Paper, yep, watch this video, kind of figure out a couple things. At that point, it's on us to, we've got an employee who's doing all the plane loads ahead of time on the computer, so they're figuring out of those 15.
So I'm assuming you have all the equipment. I wouldn't have to bring my own equipment.
No, you just show up. Yep.
No, you show up and pay for a pair of shoes.
How the hell would anybody know what to bring?
We'll tell you, all we do is just ask you to dress for the weather, because if you're April, it could be a little chilly, right? So you might, wear a sweatshirt, wear a couple
even
layers.
If it's 60 degrees down here,
it'll be about 40 degrees colder up there, up top. Yeah, so if it's a 60 degree day on the ground, it's probably 20 Fahrenheit when we're jumping.
But
out.
If you need a shoot, DIA here out in Tooele Sound,
Army Navy surplus store.
So we'll that employee is going to put together all the plane loads, because you might have, you know, one instructor, two instructors with the video guy. We also do solo training, so there might be some solo trainer people on there, and there's the licensed jumpers. So that employee is constantly figuring out how everybody is going to be out of that 15, you know, two first timers, a couple students, a bunch of licensed guys. So while they're doing that, you just kind of hang out, and then the plane's just going up and down during that time. Eventually, your instructor will come meet you about 20 minutes before the jump. They'll go over that video, you know, make sure they want to understand or understand that you kind of figured out what you need to do. They'll get you in one of the tandem harnesses, make sure it's all tight, secure, everything's checked, and then you'll get goggles and gloves if you need it, if it's super cold. Then about 5 minutes before your jump, the instructor will grab their parachute, whether they might have been jumping before or just waiting for you. Either way, you guys will get up together, and as soon as the plane pulls up, the plane will just not stop all day long. So the plane's just going every half
tuck
hour.
And roll.
Yeah, it'll the last people will be landing. The plane will pull up, and
you'll have to
hop right on the plane.
You jumped out.
That's
of the
true.
Plane.
There's nobody left when they
you
get back.
You have to
yeah.
run.
But, look, if you tuck and roll at the end of a skydive, you're probably going to get hurt, buddy.
I mean, sometimes you might need to. It has happened. So you'll hop on the plane. It's about a, depending on the day, 15-minute-ish plane ride. It just kind of does a big spiral. Yeah. Yep. You take off right at the airport and you land right on the airport. So it just kind of does a big circle around the airport, flies right over top. Everybody starts jumping out, usually some solo people first, maybe a couple students. And then you're just kind of scooting down the benches closer and closer to the door. And the instructor will kind of have you stand up, sit down at the edge of the door, and you'll just ready, set, go. And you just fall out of the plane. And from there, you're just kind of sitting there. Trying to do the thing you were told, put your legs back a little bit, keep your head up if
not
you can remember.
The instructor's hand.
Yeah, we have you hold on to your harness, just kind of keep your arms out of the way. So you're kind of sitting here in this little banana shape, if you can imagine it, kind of with your belly uh-huh. first. And the instructor will hop out with you. You'll start falling. You might have a videographer circling around you, taking photos of the whole thing. And they'll get a little... There's a mini parachute that goes with the tandems. Because if you think about it, it's the weight of two people, but only the drag of one.
Sure.
So you're going to be going way too fast if you don't have that. So in order for the parachute to be able to open like normal, there's a little mini drag chute that goes behind you. And it basically brings you to the regular free fall speed of like one skydiver. So the videographer who's just by himself, he can keep up with you, right? And then the parachute opens at normal speed and all that. So you've got this little chute behind you. So once the instructor gets that out, then you can let go of your harness, put your arms out, start feeling the wind, try to make some turns, try to feel the air, high five the videographer guy. Look at the view, because we have really, really good views. I think that's one of my favorite parts about Skydive Utah.
You can see, I'm sure you can see the Salt Flats.
You can see the Salt Flats, the whole Salt Lake.
Salt Lake.
You can see all the way over, like multiple mountain ranges to the west. You can see into Salt Lake, the Wasatch, and all.
So I bet that's a pretty amazing view.
It's really, really pretty. Yeah, that's
on
one
a
of my
clear day.
Parts.
You'll see as far as like Wendover.
You can see, you can see Wendover.
Way past Ogden,
yeah,
obviously.
And, nice.
Yeah, Wendover is just the third mountain range down, and that's the state line basically. So it's really, really pretty. It's very unique having the water, the mountains, the Salt Flats, the city.
See,
not
babe.
A lot of places to get that.
To be able to see that.
See, babe, I could go skydiving.
How many tandem jumps do you have to have? Because I mean, I know that before you could just go on your own years ago, but there's a lot more regulation now. How many tandem jumps do you have to have before you're able to go on your own solo?
So, at Skydive Utah, two. So one can be wherever. If you did a jump in Hawaii, great. And then if you're looking to get licensed, your second jump, tandem will be after you take ground school. So we got about an 8 to 10 hour course that we typically teach every Saturday. And it's just a death camp, you know, we're teaching you how to jump out on your own and survive, for your first jump. And you'll do that dive flow with a tandem first, with a tandem instructor first, before you go do it on your own with the two instructors that will be holding on to the side of you instead of being strapped to your back. So
we've done it a lot of different ways. One tandem, two tandems, no tandems. And, the two tandem way, where the first one, you do nothing, have a good time, just enjoy it. The second one, you wear an altimeter, you have a couple jobs, you actually have to pull the parachute for you and your instructor, which is essentially what you're going to do on your first solo jump. We found that just works the most successfully. And not like I'm saying people are just, you know, skydiving to death when they fail.
So how many fatalities do you guys have?
So what I mean is that it's the most successful in that if you just go straight to solo, the mental overload can be pretty difficult. Some people might be able to handle it, but you might just waste your money because the instructors are going to have to pull your parachute for you. You're going to fail the level. You're not going to do the things you were supposed to do, which means you're going to have to do it 3 or 4 times. But getting kind of the two of them out of the way, just to get over the airplane fear, the wind noise, the engine noise, the speed, it just kind of helps you get some of that stuff, you know, behind you. So then when you go by yourself then you're a little bit more comfortable to watch the altimeter, pull the parachute, take a few breaths. And we just find people have a lot more success and a lot more fun. Cause right, if you have a bad experience because the instructor pulled your parachute, you know, you didn't do what you were supposed to, you feel like you failed. That's not fun. You know, that's gonna make you want to come back. So we feel like, this gives you the most success and the most fun along the way, is to do it the way that we have it.
Yeah.
Have you had anyone die?
Hey, yeah, we weren't trying to dodge that question.
Yeah, sorry.
Because
it is a high risk activity in theory. Like.
And it's inherently dangerous, right? Like, if something does go wrong, you might die. And high probability that
it's
you might die. But at Skydive Utah, no, we've had zero tandem fatalities. We have had, solo fatalities due to, pilot error. One since we've owned it. And that's just pilot error.
That was before we owned it.
You say pilot error like the airplane pilot error?
No,
like the canopy pilot. I'm like, let's be clear, because it's not the airplane guy that's the issue.
No, not the airplane. Like, the canopy pilot.
He didn't double back and like take the dude.
In fact, and across the board, worldwide, most skydiving deaths are under a perfectly good parachute, perfect conditions. You know, nothing going wrong, and just someone unfortunately made a mistake.
Yeah, or like they had some health issue in the sky.
Yeah, that's even rare too, but it does happen.
Even less than that, he's just meaning like you're coming into land, and you kind of make a sharp turn, you know, at the wrong time, right? And when you make a turn, you speed up a little bit, and when you're coming, you know, when you come into land, like a, you know, airliner coming down the runway, you come in straight and you kind of level off and land. If you come in and make a sharp turn, you could crash.
There's a reason why motorcycle accidents are really deadly, because when you're going 50, 60, 70 miles an hour and you hit the ground from your bike, it doesn't matter if there's another car involved. When you hit the ground at that speed, it does a lot
the
of damage.
Doesn't move.
No.
Right. That's what has happened once with the previous owner in recent history, maybe about 15 years ago at this point.
That's
13
a long time.
Years ago. Someone just made a mistake coming into land, made a bit of a sharp turn, crashed, and just ended up.
That's a board you don't want in the front office. Days Till Last Death.
Seven. So you talked about your waivers and stuff, and I'm sure that's a huge, I mean, how much did you have to pay the attorneys to make sure they were ironclad? Cause it really is like when you skydive.
No waiver is ironclad.
No. And most waivers most everything can be fought in court. But like, honestly, at the end of the day, you are definitely embarking on a very risky activity. It's not like getting on a roller coaster.
Right. The safety stats back in the day, 30, 40 years ago when skydiving first started, I mean, it was a really rebellious, hardcore sport. You're talking like the biker gang folks that are skydiving, and that's about it.
For my 80th birthday, I want to jump out of a plane.
Yeah. And this is kind of when the tandems were first started to be developed, and it was a new thing. And since then, I'd say in the past, 15, 20 years, even a little longer than that, just the safety and the gear and the technology involved has evolved so much to be really relatively safe. So in a way, it kind of is like riding a roller coaster. You sign the waiver and sure, something could happen on that roller coaster, a nut or bolt falls out or whatever. But, there's so many things that are put in place now for backup and, safety checks and double check and everything that it's really rare to have a tandem death without there being just an egregious mistake.
I'm curious, talking about safety, you've done a ton of jumps. I mean, somewhere between 4,000 and 5,000 for yourself there, Mike. And I don't remember how many you said, Mark.
2,000.
Like in all of those jumps, 6,000 to 7,000 between the two of you. Have you guys personally ever had to use a backup chute?
Yeah, I've had to 4 times out of those.
That's a pretty damn good rate in my opinion. I mean, that's less than like a tenth of a percent, right?
Yeah.
I've had to once for the first time last year. I broke my streak. I was hoping to keep it going as long as I could.
That's a 1 out of 2,000 is absurd.
Yeah, and it was a dumb mistake too. It was all my fault. It was just a very minor issue that I unfortunately had to use my reserve for.
Yeah, and statistically around the country, so the USPA, the United States Parachute Association, they collect a lot of data, and they have for, 30, 40 years or something. And they've kind of determined that 1 out of 1,000 is going to be a cutaway.
That seems about right.
Statistically.
For the two of you. But do you guys pee yourselves when it is time to go to that reserve?
When you pull the chute it doesn't work the way it's supposed to?
You're just in the moment. And of course, you want to save your own life. So you just do what you're trained. And every single jump we treat the same. And I'd like to say that for most skydivers. You got your life in your own hands, and if you're an instructor, you got someone else's life in your own hands. So, you're doing the safety stuff, and the tandem instructors, they've all got plans. They've got wives, girlfriends, husbands,
right?
Kids. So no one wants to die. So it's just one of those things where it's not like riding a bike. You're doing your safety checks before every single jump, multiple times.
It's like flying a plane.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I'm sure I know the answer to this one, but have you ever had anybody get up there and just absolutely panic, chicken out, and you'll have to bring them back?
Yeah, about once or twice a year.
Okay, I was going to say, I'm positive. Yeah. Have you ever had anybody throw up on you?
If I even got him to get
Is that pretty common to have people throwing up on you?
I'd say like 10 a year.
Yeah, to me, 10 a year.
That's more common than people.
That's almost 1 a month.
But that's usually maybe after you land, because it's sometimes the parachute ride can make you motion sickness, so it'd usually be after you land. It could happen when you're out of the parachute.
I remember when I was a kid in Civil Air Patrol, in Wyoming, we had the chance to go up inside of a C-130.
Oh, yeah, do the free.
Yeah, and they're up at
zero gravity.
They're up in the C-130. No, we didn't do the zero gravity, but they opened up the bay door.
Cool.
As we're up, cruising, and I bet half the people puked almost instantly into their little puke bags. Like, for me, that stuff's never been an issue, but it was a pretty quick puke for them.
If you're prone to motion sickness, I'd say the plane ride will get you and the canopy ride will get you.
Yeah, because it's not like a commercial plane. Like, I mean, it's a commercial plane in a sense, but it's not like a
commercial passenger plane.
Small planes that are a very different experience flying.
Yeah, when conditions are smooth and nice, it's a wonderful ride. But if there's a little bit of turbulence, it's going to feel more turbulent than being in like a 737.
You fly that all the time. How is the turbulence in that specific area? Because, like, for instance, if anyone's ever flown into Denver from Salt Lake. The coming down over the Rocky Mountains, coming over the peaks that are on the west side of Denver, it's like a roller coaster. Even on big planes, oftentimes the turbulence is insane because the wind coming off those mountains is just insane. How is the valley that you guys are in there?
So, from the north, south, we don't have any mountains. We got the Great Salt Lake and then the never ending Tooele Valley. And typically the predominant winds in Salt Lake and Tooele Valley are north or south. So, when we're jumping, I mean, unless the upper winds are in a completely different direction than on the ground, typically it's smooth. I'd say we have, you know, one or two turbulent days a month where we're able to jump. But if it's that turbulent, chances are, the ground winds are unsafe for us to be flying.
So, like, when the trucks are flipping over on I-80, you guys aren't flying.
When we have an east-west wind, that's when you're going to get that mountain wave, rolling, nasty winds. And that's going to go all the way to the ground, and we're not flying parachutes in that anyway.
And most of the time when we get those east-west winds, they're usually accompanied with big storms.
A storm, yeah. I mean, the parachutes are pretty sensitive to turbulence, so, you know, we'll shut down. Because the parachutes can't handle it, you know, which will, you know, so we won't really be up within the plane.
Have you ever
conditions.
Been up in the air and had to call it and come back down?
Yeah, we're constantly watching that. And, you know, we don't try and push it like that to where we're right at the edge, but you never know.
You storms, get up there and it's like, uh-uh.
Yeah, a storm that, you know, we think is an hour and a half away can roll in really quick. And, you know, Mark or one of our grounds managers or, you know, another safety crew on the ground is constantly watching that and radioing the pilot to say, hey, bring him down. We're getting, you know, gusts of wind that are way too high. So it's, you know, Skydive Utah especially, like, it's all fun and games. We have a really awesome culture of, you know, just having a good time. But safety is always number one. Yeah. So we don't take any risks with the weather or anything like that. And, you know, all of our staff, and we pride ourselves on this, they do a really good job of making everything fun while still being safe. And that's, you know, there's a fine line there.
Right.
Yeah. So we take that definitely seriously. I mean, I don't, you know, every single plane load that goes up, you know, before they drop, it's like, all right, for the next 10 minutes, are the conditions good? Should we go? Does this make sense? You know, every single plane load of, you know, the whatever 1,500 we do, you know, throughout the year is going to have that question asked before they go. Cause, you know, I don't want to see anybody get hurt, and I don't want to be stressing out on the ground because it's bad conditions or something, you know? So we always will just come back down. You could jump another day. We could wait for this storm to pass, whatever it is. There's no reason to push it, right? You want to have a good time. You want to be scared, but still safe. You don't want to be scared because it actually is something that's not a good idea.
You want to be scared because you're nervous.
Just
because
it's fun.
Done it before.
Yeah.
Right.
You want to be fun scared, not actual scared.
What's the best time of year, the best like months or weeks or days for you guys from a jump perspective out there?
They've all got. I mean, in the spring it's colder, but it's usually smoother. Sometimes you get some maybe clouds in the distance that are really pretty. The views can be awesome. The mountains will have snow-capped tops on them, which can be really pretty. But you're dealing with the cold. In the summertime, you can go shorts and a t-shirt all the way up to full altitude. And, but you might have, you know, there's no snow left on the mountains. You're not going to see any clouds usually because there's usually no clouds in the summertime. But it's shorts and a t-shirt, super comfortable, super warm. And you know, same thing in the fall, like the snow will start to come in, but it gets colder. So it's always good. We won't send you up if it's not good. Right. Cause we close in the wintertime cause it's too cold.
I was going to ask what are your months?
April 1st through like early November.
What about when there's fires? Because Utah, obviously, especially in the summertime, we end up with tons of fires all around us, and there's a lot of smoke in the air. Are you guys diving in those conditions still?
Yes, as long as we're within what's called VFR, visual flight rules.
Just because you gotta have some visual distances. I'm
sure. Have you ever had the smoke so bad down there you've had to? Camps.
Yes, I think twice, two or three times.
Couple of years, I would imagine.
We've had some rough ones the past few years. Yeah.
And even if it is okay, you know, our instructors are going up 10, 15 times. And, you know, after the sixth time of them breathing that in at, you know, being force fed down their throat.
Well, because, I mean, at that altitude, too, like, especially,
okay anymore,
I think, like, last year when we had the Canadian fires and the fires from up north, where all of the smoke from them were coming down into our valleys. Like, that's at the that's at the altitude you guys are jumping.
Yeah, like, yeah,
that's
absolutely.
In that, you know, 15-ish thousand feet range.
Yeah, and it, honestly, the visuals can be pretty cool because the plane will fly through the smoke layer.
Yeah.
And then there's this, like, false horizon, and you can barely see
and
the
then
ground.
And then you dive back through it.
Yeah,
it'll jump back through it. Sometimes it'll make multiple, like, there will be a layer at 4,000 feet where it kind of collects, and then it'll be a little clearer, and then another layer at 6,000 feet, and then we go above it, and you'll see it just does some really weird stuff depending on where it's coming from.
That's
and the winds.
Cool.
That is cool.
Yeah.
How many bugs do you think you guys have eaten?
That's a good question.
Oh, the plane's definitely eaten a lot, that's for sure.
But, right.
Most of our instructors and jumpers, they're wearing full face helmets now with a screen, so it's... Yeah, not
so,
too bad. But
so, do you have any funny stories you can tell us about whatever people or things that have happened that
last time you got puked on?
I think I need to do this now.
Oh yeah, everyone should do it.
Well, I want to, but our friends went, and I have some neck problems, and he's like, it kind of can hurt your neck, and I'm like, I don't know, it might be worth it.
I mean, it should be like everything should be okay, but that is. It could be a concern. Yeah, I mean, if anything could happen, like you said, it's a bunch of parachute material opening up, and it's really designed to open up slowly, right? It usually takes about 1,000 feet to slow you down. But you might get jostled around. It could happen, but you could use... It's hard to say. That is something to maybe consider a little bit. That's one of the few things that you might want to actually consider if you have, you know, like, a neck or a back injury, because that's really the only thing that could maybe be an issue. As the parachute opens, you're going to get shaken around a little bit. But... Highly likely you would be okay.
Can't be any worse than going down the bobsled track.
The bobsled track is way more hard.
Well, I've done that. So look, that's
bobsled
that's
track
my next
is
thing,
fucking
babe.
Cool.
It is awesome. That's some high G stuff.
That
in
is
there,
the
crazy.
I had no, like, because you see that stuff and like you really don't understand just watching
like,
it.
You're watching it, and you're like, wow, that's fast.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
No, fucking like you can't move. Yeah. Like you're like
they're like keep your arms on the side so that you don't jostle, and before you know it, your arms are like down here.
Yeah, and you're like trying to just. Lift your fucking head up, and you're like, no wonder they always have their heads down.
I haven't done that.
It's
really fun.
Yeah, I got my head pinned into the person in front of me, and then by the end of the ride, I think I was like slumped all the way
back.
It's
so cool.
Just on the floor of the bobsled.
Just for listeners, anyone can do it. The Olympic Park up in Park City has the bobsled track.
Any time of year.
Yeah, cool. In the summer they stick wheels on the sleds. In the winter,
so it's not quite as fast, but you can get going. It's still fast.
It's more expensive in the winter to do it than in the summer because there's just more people there, and the Olympic team still trains on that track all the time.
But you push yourself on everything; it's really cool.
It's pretty sweet.
It's so fun. We went up there for work.
And I would do that because this, like, I'm fine. Like, even if that thing crashes,
yeah. But
I'm
you got scared to go down the tube.
I just have issues jumping out of perfectly good airplanes.
Yeah. I mean, the bobsled sounds way more dangerous to me because there's all kinds of things you could hit in the sky. What are you going to run into? Just all clean itself.
Have you ever had a bird?
You
ever had birds?
I haven't. No. Luckily, they usually get out of our way.
I don't know if skydivers have ever hit a bird. Yeah. Planes sometimes, but
yeah. I mean, planes
I feel like it's kind of like a car. I mean, every once in a while, a car is going to hit a bird because it's going to like get caught up in the wind. But for the most part, they're like. These idiots up here again. Yeah. I just get out of their way.
They're just falling gracefully.
They don't like the parachutes. Every now and then, if you're flying under the parachute, depending on the time of year, there's, you know, maybe some hawks or something at the airport, and they'll maybe dive bomb your parachute and kind of swoop towards it. There's nothing you can do about it. It doesn't really cause any issues, but they might try to scare you away or see what it is.
That is the weirdest cloud I've ever seen.
I actually do have, I don't know, a funny story that comes to mind since we've... been at the drop zone at least a couple of years ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, a lady came out for her 95th birthday to do a tandem.
Wow.
And it was a big to-do. Her family, you know, pre-arranged it. They got the news crew out there. They got signs, you know, making a really big spectacle out of it. And, well, she lands, and the news crew's got the cameras in her face, and Mark and I are out there, and we're all, you know, huddled around. And they, you know, the interviewer's like, how did you like it? And she goes, it was horrible. I hated it. And we're like, oh, shut the cameras off. Like, come on.
That was a good one.
That's
funny.
That was pretty funny.
That is pretty funny.
So how long have you guys owned Skedda, Utah?
We bought it in 2016.
Yeah.
So it's our 8th year going into it now.
How long has it been around?
30 plus years. Yeah.
1980-ish.
So has it had a couple
80s?
Of owners in its day?
We're the second owners.
Oh, second owners.
Yeah, Jack Guthrie, the man, the myth, the legend, yeah. And he still jumps. He might hang it up this year, but yeah,
he just get to the point where he's like
got probably 15,000 jumps. Wow, yeah. There.
That's a lot of jumps.
Yeah, but yeah, he was the pioneer in skydive Utah. Started it in Cedar Valley. Skydive Salt Lake was at our location previously, and Jack from Skydive Utah moved his drop zone to the Tooele location in 2001.
Yeah, around there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, 01, 03, maybe somewhere around there.
Yeah, it was 2000. Yeah, I think 2001, yeah. Yep, and it's been operating there ever since, and Mark and I took it over, yeah, like you said, 2016. Yeah, it was fun.
So
it's been a cool ride.
If somebody wants to do it, where do they go? How do they get a hold of you?
Yeah, what are costs?
Do they just drive out and
what's
show
all that
up?
Kind
yeah.
of stuff?
We do recommend making a reservation, but yeah, we've got a great website, tons of information, skydiveutah.com, Utah spelled out. And there's a book now button where you can sign up for a tandem, and there's tons of information on, you know, getting licensed, or if you're an experienced diver, we've got, you know, all the info you need with our rules and what you can and cannot do, just to keep it safe. And you can always email us, fly@skydiveutah.com. There's contact information on our website too. But
do you ever get like bachelorette parties?
Oh yeah.
Definitely.
Do they get
but
a discount if there's like multiple, or is it?
I think we currently have one, five or more. You can get a discount. Oh, yeah, there's a bunch of different little discounts you can get depending on like, college students and little things like
nice.
That.
Yeah, get them young.
But we do accept walk-ins. We recommend calling in advance, give you time frame on that day.
Do you guys both live out in the Tooele area?
No, I live in Salt Lake.
Yep, Salt Lake.
Yeah.
That's not that bad. I mean, I guess in the winter maybe, but you are kind of closed in
the
winter.
You're also driving the opposite direction.
It's opposite direction,
yeah.
It takes
traffic.
Me 30 minutes to get there.
Yeah, that's like, if you live in Tooele and work in Salt Lake, that's a different story.
So what do you guys do when you're in your off season, since that's what you've been in for a while and you're getting ramped up now in the next couple of weeks?
They fly south and jump some more.
Just try and take over the world, you know?
Give the brain.
I mean, that's when you get to do all the actual business shit and like, update the website.
Yeah, catch up on back end stuff.
Maybe remodel this or that. Yeah, so many. Yeah. Plane maintenance or plane upgrades we want to do, or business upgrades, or
put those cool like stadium seat cushions on the bench inside the airplane.
Yeah. But you know, it is a. We're fortunate to get a nice break and decompress from the year because we, you know, during the skydive season, it's
stuff on your body too. It's got to take a toll. It's probably nice to have a little break.
Definitely,
yeah.
So during the season,
we're going sunrise, sunset.
What days and what hours do you run during the season?
Thursday through Monday, typically 9 till sunset.
Yeah, we'll start at 9 a.m. We usually do our reservations 9 to 5, and we'll just jump as long as there's still people there. So if less reservations, might close early, more reservations, we'll jump till sunset.
So could someone sign up to do like 2 or 3 in a row in a day, or do you not suggest that?
For tandems, yes, you can do that if you're wanting to. But really, if you want to do multiple jumps, you should go through our student program. And yes, you can sign up to do 3, maybe 4 in a day as a student. That's about all the time you're gonna.
That's a lot.
Do. Yeah. As a student, it's a lot of information. Yeah. You're spending an hour on the ground before and after the jump, doing a pre-briefing and what's called dirt diving. So you're doing the dive flow on the ground. So you're laying down on the ground and your instructor's taking your body position and, you know, showing you exactly what you need to do. And then you hammer that out multiple times so that it's, you're not
muscle
thinking
memory.
About it. Yep. So you're not thinking about it up in the air. And
so if somebody wants to get certified, they can do that through you guys, right?
Absolutely.
How does that work? Is that like a 2-month course, 3 months, or how does that work?
I mean, you can get it done. Like, it's 8 jumps. This is the main.
Okay.
That's, so there's, it's longer than that, but the main bulk of it is 8 jumps with instructors. There's 2 at first. They're holding on to you, but they're not attached in any way. So you are solo. And then you kind of go down to 1 instructor, and then he holds you less. And then by the 8th one, you're pretty much jumping out solo, falling solo, landing solo. And then after that, they check you to go solo. You're still a student. It's kind of like a learner's permit with your driver's license. You can't jump with a bunch of, like, 10 students can't go jump together. You got to stay solo or maybe with an instructor or something. You practice landing, practice packing your parachute, a bunch of little things. Check off this whole card of items. And then at 25 jumps, you become a real licensed skydiver. That's your first license you can get at 25. It's called your A license at that point. And so those first 8, I mean, that could take a few days. If the weather's good and you're doing 3 jumps a day and you're not you know, like I said, you might fail a jump when I was talking earlier. If you don't have to do level three twice or whatever it is, you know, you can get that done in a few days. And then if you're doing 3-5 jumps a day, you could get your A license in easily a week or two.
Oh.
So it really just depends on time, money, and weather at that point. And then once you're A licensed, you're a just regular jumper. You can jump, you can not jump, you can hang out, jump with other people, start, you know, trying different things.
So if someone signs up for the class, do they pay for like a course, or is it per jump, or is it different for each case?
It's per jump, and we don't do packages just because it gets messy if someone decides it's not for them halfway through the through the lessons and whatnot. So yeah, you just pay as you go. And yeah, like Mark said, there's just certain criteria. Once you're onto your solos, it's cool because it's kind of like you know, it's you're self-taught in a way. You know, there's certain criteria that you go practice. And when it's time to get your license, you're going to go do what's called an A license check dive and kind of prove to the instructor that like, hey, I've done all these things and practice all these things that I'm proficient at now and safe to go jump with other skydivers. Cause you don't want to be a meat missile taking out the other formation, you know?
The discount thing, we do it a little after the fact cause we don't want to, you know, have you pay up front and you change your mind and we take your money and you're screwed. So we try to make it just, we don't want to be taking people's money for no reason. So we do a thing after the fact. You know, I kind of said there's those first 8 jumps and then the 25. So if you get through the first 8 and, I forget, it's either 4 or 6 weeks. I think it's 4 weeks. You get, you know, 10 free jumps, 10 free solo jumps. And then if you finish your A license in 8 weeks, I believe it is, you get another 10 free jumps.
Okay.
So you kind of get,
so you're
like,
kind of well on your way to
way.
The next stage of whatever you want to do.
And so it's kind of like the package deal comes after you complete.
Yeah, if you do it, you can get a cool deal that way.
Well, because you think here, I'm going to be licensed after 2 jumps. You're like, I can't do this.
Yeah, I mean, by 8 jumps, I think you're probably settled in. But then getting to 25, even with 10 free, that's still a big commitment to get the additional after that. So.
Yeah, you're looking at, depending on how those discounts work out, I think it's between like 3,000 to 4,000 to get your A license.
Yeah.
Maybe like 2,800 to 3,800, to get that A license of all those 25 jumps. Depending on if you get any discounts along the way or not.
Yeah. But yeah, we've got a really solid crew. I don't know, 300 to 400 local skydivers that are licensed.
I was just going to ask that.
Yeah. And they just, they come out, you know, some of them do 10, 15, 20 jumps a year. Some of them do hundreds of jumps a year with us. And
so they volunteer or do
no?
They
these
pay
are
them?
These customers. Are just
those are just
these
people
are just customers, licensed skydivers that just want to come out.
How many instructors do you guys have?
I was gonna say they probably staff. Got. They're probably not taking volunteer instructors.
no volunteer instructors. But full time, we usually have 8 every day. Nice. And on staff, I mean, we have around 65-75 employees total, and I'd say 2/3 of those are instructors.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Around there.
Well, we really appreciate you guys coming and chatting with us.
This is really cool.
Cool.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see you guys out there. I mean, we're getting ready to go. It's a couple weeks away right
Chris
now.
Chris is a no, but
you might
I
see
have
her
been
out there.
Wanting to go.
It's not, skydiving's
so
never been on my
bad.
Bucket.
You could come hang out and watch. It's still fun
no,
to watch.
No, I would definitely
come. He would
come
definitely
hang out.
Drive out
yeah.
there, but
it's a good time, even if you don't jump, to watch all the parachutes come down, because there's, you know, 10, 15 parachutes coming down every
half
hour.
Really cool looking.
All day long. Yeah. And there's some of the people doing the swooping stuff like we were talking about, coming really fast. They might fly over the hangar and go land in the landing area and all kinds of fun stuff. It's a good time.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
We have a lot of people that are hard-nosed and they come out and watch. And after seeing the instructors do their 6th, 7th, 8th in a row, you're like,
it feels so
normal.
Go do it. Once you're out there, everyone's doing it. It's normal. This guy just did it 4 times before you even just
he
went to the bathroom.
He still hasn't gotten a tattoo, so I don't know.
Hey, tattoos are trashy. No offense. okay, we're going to do our affirmation.
Weekly affirmation.
Be yourself, even if you're crazy. Stop worrying about the normal ass, nothing ass people judging your cool, weird ass.
That's a good one.
I like that. That'd be a good tattoo for you.
There you go.
That's a long tattoo. For a guy that has no tattoos, should I get the words like scrawled across my wrist?
Yeah. With some butterflies.
Yeah.
Little fucking stars.
And a little dolphin. Yeah. Little dolphin.
I like it.
There'll be none of that today. Anytime you feel yourself worrying about any of those asses, remember who you gotta wake up to be every morning. You, baby, you. Your job is to make sure you're good on your own terms. Check in with what you really care about and make sure you're living up to that, not what all those asses out there might be thinking.
That's a good one.
I like it.
And we just pull these at random.
Yeah, I just, there's a, wow, these feel like the longer we go, the more it feels like this finite number is actually a lot smaller than I was anticipating like 3 weeks ago. Cause it's, the stack's getting much smaller now.
Yeah, I'll be sad when those are gone.
We'll have to find another cool thing to do like that. If you liked what you heard, please share the episode. You can find us.
If you didn't like what you heard, tell everybody how bad it was and have them listen to it.
Make sure you share it and be like, these fucking idiots, man.
It's like milk.
The skydive, Utah guys were great, but those morons that were on the podcast. go follow us on social media at TNU Podcast everywhere. Join our Patreon. Patreon.com/TNUP.
And at some point we have a plan to do something really cool in there. We just haven't done it yet.
The website?
No.
In the Discord and the Patreon. Oh. You can still get a chicken, name a chicken.
You can. Nobody's gotten a chicken to name.
So, but if you want to name a chicken.
Remember some of the questions that we asked today, I'm sure we probably would have gotten around to them, but some of them were really inspired by
our listeners
that are in the Patreon. That had dived before and some that were just questioning it because they are here and they wanted to know. So
cool.
So have a good week, have a good Easter, and then go take April Fool's skydive.
You.
That's what I'll be doing.